we're going to hear Alfred Gezi, pioneer, story of his history in Alaska. And Alfred, I don't know that it's just fair for one ex-postmaster to have another ex-postmaster on the spot like this, but we'll try to be as patient, I mean as careful as we can, and not put you on too much of the spot. However, to start with, the customary thing is to state your name and where you were born and when you came to Alaska, and from that point on, I think everyone is going to be interested in hearing your life story as far as it's connected with Alaska and what state you came from.
Well, before proceeding, is it permissible for me to tell you how I feel in the case of this time?
Oh, I think it would be very much in order. Very interesting.
Well, I feel like old Hank at the dedication of the bridge. Old Hank was one of a number of settlers who went away onto the frontier and took up land, started a project there, as they're doing in here at the present time. And amongst other things, they built a bridge across the stream. Yeah. And after completing it, the settlers got together and agreed that they should dedicate the bridge, hold a celebration. See? So they sent away down the line. Of course, they had to come in horseback those days for an old attorney, lawyer, to make the dedication speech. So when the appointed time came for to make the speech, they couldn't find the guest. Found him asleep in the haymow, I believe. So they prevailed upon old Hank. He was one of the leading spirits in the community to make the speech, dedication speech. So Hank agreed. He said he'd do the best he could. Like myself, he wasn't much of a public speaker. So he mounted the soapbox and he says, fellow settlers, the timber in that there bridge 6 months ago was way out here in the woods. Yeah, he says, 6 months ago the timber in that there bridge was way out here in the woods. And I wish it was there now.
Yeah, very good, very good.
That's about the way I feel.
Did that happen in the state that you came from? That bridge?
Well, I don't know where I should start with my little talk.
For the purpose of the record, Alfred, you state your name and birthplace as part of the record that we might hear for the future generation.
Well, my name is Alfred Peter John Gezi, G H E Z Z I. But I have dropped one name and go out as Alfred J. Mm-hmm. My parents had 13 children and I was the 10th. I found three names for me, and we had three, and I had a hard time to find names for them.
What state did you say you were from?
I'm a New Zealander by birth.
Well, New Zealander. I see.
I was born in New Zealand.
Down under.
But I've been a citizen of the United States for 49 years.
I am.
I come up here pretty young. You didn't think I was that old, did you?
I didn't really,
really know.
What year did you come
to
Alaska?
1906. Oh, Lord.
What's wrong?
There, you broke it.
Well, they're just taking a picture of you there for the record, too. You came in 1906 and landed at
Alaska. I first heard of Alaska in the late 1890s, when I was going to school. heard of the Dawson Discovery Stampede. Came out in the papers that gold was laying around the streets of Dawson like sacks of coal.
That's right.
That's probably why I'm here. After leaving school, shortly thereafter, less than 2 years, I volunteered with a regiment for South Africa, 10th New Zealand Mounted Rifles. Boer War was on at that time, but the war closed that year. We returned home. That was 1902. March 18th, 1904, I boarded the old Montrose, was it? No, Ventura, one of Spreckles' boats. My destination was Vancouver, B.C. I stayed in Frisco about a week and then proceeded on to Vancouver. And from there, I went down to Snohomish, Washington.
Oh boy, I will hold down.
And on up to Monte Cristo. Know what that is?
Mining. Yeah.
Mining. I went to work there. I got a job there. But employed by a man named Ad Cleveland, who was superintendent of a mining project up there. We put in a air compressor for Willman Brothers, a mining partnership, and then we proceeded on down towards Darrington. Went just 24 miles through the woods down there.
The Everett Monte Cristo Railroad was built.
Well, we went to Silverton on a hand car and then walked 9 miles across to Bornite Copper and Gold Mining Company. It was 11 miles from Darrington, as I remember. And there we put in another air compressor plant, 3,000 miles of an aerial tram and the like. And then I went with Cleveland down to Seattle, Washington. That was the first that I saw Seattle. Come spring of 1905, about the latter part of May, I headed for Dawson City. Went up by Skagway, White Horse. Met up with three other boys who had a boat, an outfit. They were going to Dawson, so I bought an interest in the boat and outfit, and we set sail for Dawson City down the river. I stayed around the country there for that summer. Worked up at El Dorado. That's 14 miles up Bonanza. I worked up there in Gold Hill for Palmer Brothers, the hydraulic outfit. And come fall, I left for the outside again. Went out to Seattle, on down to San Francisco, back to Seattle. And on that trip, I left, on the return trip, I left Frisco about a week sooner than expecting to, and the boat that I was supposed to go on, the Valencia, ran into Vancouver Island. Most of them were lost.
Mm-hmm. Narrow escape.
That was a close call, yeah. Well, on arriving back in Seattle. I took another run up to Monte. The foreman asked me to go up there on a job. I didn't stay very long.
Come back to Seattle.
Yeah. and met up with another young fellow, Bill Glazier, who I had met on the boat coming out from Dawson. And we decided to come into the Tanana Valley, Fairbanks, Stampede in there that time.
How did you come into Fairbanks?
Oh, that's what I was getting at.
Oh.
We left Seattle on the Santa Ana, if you remember that boat.
Wow.
And we got out as far as Flattery and it sprung a leak. We had to come back to Seattle to get patched up. But we started out again and made Valdez. And there we bought a Yukon sled, stove, a couple of robes.
What month was this?
February.
Mm-hmm. February 1906?
1906.
Mm-hmm.
Cooked up a batch of beans, froze them loose in a sack, and a slab or two of bacon, 10 dozen donuts. Started up from Fairbanks. We were 21 days on that trip from Valdez to Fairbanks. That was said to be around 400 miles of those days.
Mm-hmm.
It was no hardship. We were both young and husky.
Over Johnson Pass and Isabel Pass.
Yeah, we, first afternoon, we went up to Wortman's, if you know where that is.
Yeah, foot of the summit.
And we had a double trip from there to the summit. And I had a silk umbrella. Bill used to often josh me about that. We had it on top of the sled. And I took it there at Thompson's at Ptarmigan Drop.
Yeah.
I stuck it up the snowbank. I guess it's there yet. Well, we made Fairbanks. By March 8th, we come down to Cushman, pulling the sled with it. I don't recall whether I was on the gee pole or handlebars or whether he was. And Fairbanks was quite a lively town then, up and going.
Well,
gambling halls and riots and all that goes with it.
Well, didn't say that again.
But in another way, there was less crime than there is today.
Well, less people, too.
Less people. There were I would say, between 5,000 and 6,000.
The proportion may be about the same.
5,000 and 6,000. Well, Bill, my partner, he went out to Wester Creek, got a job as foreman in a mine out there. Wasn't it the Jessen brothers?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I went to Clary City. There was a town of possibly, some less than 1,000, I guess, out there, Clary at that time.
Tony Nordale's hotel.
Tony Nordale was out there. And various others. Well, I took a contract to cut up 16 cords of wood, 16-foot wood, into 16-foot wood. For a restaurant there. Cut it up with a buck saw.
You cut it into 16-inch wood from 16-foot wood. Yeah.
That was my first job.
You ended up in Chattanooga later on, though.
Then I went to work in a mine, 3 Below Clary. And that was the latter part of April, I guess.
Who owned that mine?
Al Hilty was one. I don't recall the other fellow's name right now. No, it was my own too. But anyhow, I worked there from April until November, steady. I worked Sundays and every other day there. And two of us laid off one evening to go to a show. And the boss got mad and he laid us off.
Uh-oh.
So, I felt too proud to go to work in a drift again, and I was too honest to steal, so I started up in business, Chattanooga.
That's when I first remember you, was when you were in business in Chattanooga.
Is that so?
Yeah. You had the post office there in your store.
I believe that I heard about you and Valdez. There was a young fellow named Sheldon come in there, they said, and he was looking for an outfit, and he inquired in the store whether he should get moccasins or snowshoes. He didn't know which was the warmest. Was that you?
No, I never was in Valdez until 1913. I was on rubber tires by that time. That's one of the last standing jokes.
That's neither here nor there.
Yeah, oh yeah. The tourist lady that wanted to know which was the warmest, snowshoes or rotten moccasins.
Well,
how long were you in business in the Chattanooga?
10 years.
10 years, then. You were posting there and had the post office ready in their store.
The first 2 years, a strike came on. Western Federation had organized there, and it went flat there for 2 years.
Well, that's when what was the name of the head of that?
Tom Stephenson.
Yeah. He was the head of that strike crowd.
Yeah.
And
well,
Abe Spring was the
head. Abe went back to Russia and brought over
a bunch of Russians and a lot of
strike.
Them still around here.
Yeah, there are.
That's right. Most of these Russians that are around here now that we know, the Zhukov and what have you, and
there are several.
Abe Spring went over and brought them over to work.
Well, I might say that Solly Spring, I bought from Solly Spring, who now has got an establishment on Pike Street in Seattle.
Yeah.
They're my first opening stock. I got my opening stock from Solly.
That's not Abe Spring, that's another one.
That's the son of Abe Spring.
Solly.
Right? He's got a cigar store and lunch counters and big layout there now.
Abe Spring was the start of that.
He used to be on Clary.
Well, he had a general merchandise store.
Well, I branched out afterwards. After the first 2 years. It picked up, and I had quite a thriving business there for a few years. I took over the post office in 1909, 1910, 1911. I kept a check on my patrons there, and I had about 300 getting mail at Chattanooga Post Office those days.
What year did you get married then?
1913. I didn't have any intention of getting married until that spring. First fall I was married. Some of the ladies around there told me that I should make some woman happy, and so I took their advice. We lived together for 44 years. My wife passed away 3 years ago.
You were in the position of the young fellow that his friend said, you ought to get married. He said, I've been thinking about it. And his friend said, well, don't think about it. If you do, you might never do it. You want to get married, then think about it. Then you left Nenana.
Well,
Chattanooga and went to Nenana when Nenana became kind of a boom town.
1913, I took over the bank business there, agent for the bank.
At Chattanooga. Yeah. That was the
First National Bank. We had a bank, Washington has a bank at Chattanooga, but that went broke. I had a bit of money in that too. That's where Gus had got in trouble.
Yeah, that's right.
I received most all the gold dust that came off of Clary for those 4 years.
You used to weigh gold dust there too and everything right in your store?
Yeah. Work all day and then in the evening the boys would come down with their cleanups and get together to flip the dust out of them.
That's right. you remember what year you sold out in the Chattanooga?
I didn't sell out of Moot.
Oh, you just closed down and left.
Bottom fell out of the mining, closed down.
Yes,
and
I remember that.
There was $52,000 to be spent at Nenana. So I moved away.
Mm-hmm.
What year was that? 17. 1917. I bought lots in 16 and put up a building down there. 17, I moved family down. Late in the fall, went down the river.
You were in Nenana in business how many years?
Two children. 17 years.
17 years. Were you connected with the post office there too?
No.
You never was. The experience you had in the post office at Chattanooga didn't discourage you from going into further post office activity, did it?
The reason I quit at resigned at Chattanooga was that my business had built up so it was
I see. So you didn't want
hard to handle post office too. The mail came in there once, twice a week on the train, and usually at the last minute the cheer forward come in and want money orders written and all that stuff. And
I had to build up trolley.
Orders around the claims. In those days, I used to run between the house, the store and the warehouse. The one old guy there, he says, there'll come a day when you won't be able to do that. It's almost here now.
But 17 years in the general merchandise business in Nenana.
Yeah.
And then you finally closed down in Nenana and are sold out to somebody and came on back up here to Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm.
What year was that?
I moved the family up in the fall of 34. 35? No, fall of 34 I closed out the store too. 35 I wrecked the store building and moved up here, built that house.
You shipped the lumber up here that was in the building.
Mm-hmm.
And quite a few
George Black.
Down and
the old Model T.
Oh yeah.
One like that one you got out of college.
That's right. Nothing like that. What year did you take over the post office in Fairbanks?
40. February 6, 40.
Might be interesting to you folks to know that Mr. Gezi succeeded me as postmaster in Fairbanks. I left there in 40 and he took over. I tried to talk him out of it. I tried to talk him out of it. I said, Alfred, I don't know why you want to take over a job as tough as this.
One of the folks told me the postmaster, he says he holds that office for about 2 years and he gets in jail usually.
Oh yeah. I told Alfred that.
I happened to keep out of that.
I told Alfred that outside of bankers there's more postmasters in jail in all over the United States than any other one class of people, because the post office don't pay them enough to live on, and yet they've got to maintain some kind of a front. And
I got sicker. I'd never have resigned that. I was 3.5 years there. I went back to Mayo's, and they told me my trouble was that I worked too hard and worried too much.
Well,
if
I
you cut that out, you'll nature will take
I warned you what you were going into. At the time I was postmaster here and in charge of this post office, the truck driver that hauled the mail from the depot to the post office and back and forth for Ernie Sherman drew more money than the postmaster did. Yet he had charge of a $500,000 building with all of its ramifications and what have you, to say nothing of handling the business of the boatman. I was there for 8 years, and you talk about 8 years of love, labor lost. That was it.
That's why I could grin.
That's what made me what I am today, an old man.
Talking about that old Model T, it's the best car in Nenana.
Yeah, that's right. It ran there for years.
Judge Wickersham was coming down there, I guess it was in 32. And Andrew Nerland phoned down to me asking if I'd take care of the judge.
Oh, yeah.
So I drove him from uptown down to the mission in that. He was happy as could be.
Oh,
that was
a
great family boy, Mr. Wickersham.
I brought him to the trail in Model T, so he was.
I introduced him at the gathering there. He was pleased. I lodged him up quite a bit, you know, told him he was one of the best informed men in the territory of Alaska. I'd like that.
Oh, yeah.
I said, I'm not accustomed to speaking in public. He says, you've done pretty good, you've done pretty good.
He was a thoughtful man on the platform.
He was a good old fellow. But he, at the close of the meeting, he called me aside and said, come here, I want to talk to you. He says, I forgot to talk about the elections outside. He says, I'm going to public, and he says, in a big way. Snowed under.
That was the year Wilson was
Tony Diamond.
Tony Diamond and Roosevelt. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was going to public in a big way. So I forgot to mention that.
He was looking at the round crystal ball.
He done a lot for Lassie, just to say.
Well, yes, he sure does.
Advocating for the railroad and the college and all that stuff. Pick that location out there. He done more than he gets credit for doing.
Well, Alfred, after all is said and done, and you're thinking back over the years, do you think, are you now satisfied that you're glad you cast your lot with Alaska rather than to stay in New Zealand or Australia or someplace else?
I went back to New Zealand in 59 after my wife was laid to rest.
I know you had a visit out there one time. I wondered what your reaction might
and,
be.
Oh, I don't know. It's different. It was a frontier country at the time I left there, but of course the youngsters don't know. It was a good country. And it was all drudgery in those days, whereas now they're...
Sure.
But around where I came from, it was a dairy farming kind of country. It was all handwork then. It's all machines now.
Oh, sure.
And using wells, telephones, different organs.
Were you in South Island?
North Island, about 60 miles out of Auckland. I was born down in the lower Waikato River there, on a farm.
How many children have you?
Have I?
How many children have you?
Three. My parents had 13.
Your wife passed away.
Good old Irish family.
Your wife passed away. What year was it?
59. I always had a wandering streak and love for adventure. I don't know why. My parents, my mother came from Ireland, father from Italy, and they were married in Cape of Good Hope, South Africa, and migrated to New Zealand. So I guess I come by that honestly.
Your father was Italian.
Yeah, he was Northern Italy. One of those blue-eyed Italians.
I see. And your mother was still Irish.
He was from Limerick. My wife was from Killarney.
Your wife was from where?
Killarney, Ireland.
Oh, yeah, I see. Where is your son now, Alfred Jr.? Well,
they live in Anchorage.
Anchorage, I see.
He was up here. Yeah, trucking is his line. There were a lot of nice people around the country at that time when I went on to Clarity. Those old timers.
You mean in Alaska?
In Alaska, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Everybody knew everybody.
Did you ever
now.
Know old Fred Crewe?
Oh, yeah.
A bit of a poet?
Yeah, he was a wonderful guy.
He was a compositor, I guess.
Yeah.
Trade, an English sailor afterwards. There was one woman buried back of Clary there, the only one. When I went out there, I remember seeing her grave there. And he composed a poem. He had for several. I've read his book. A book of poems.
I have one of his booklets too, and put away.
Oh, have you?
Oh, yeah.
Is there one in the library?
I memorized several of them. I memorized that one.
What?
You talk of your brave pioneers and lord them to the skies, but never a word of the woman or the grave wherein she lies. Who sleeps out there on the hillside, where people as they pass soft catch a glimpse of a little grave half hidden in the grass, that holds the first white woman trod this golden land, who gladdened the hearts of many by extending a helping hand, who went through all that you did, camped on the same old trail, mushed in the lead in the wild stampede, and laughed at the icy gale. There's a picket fence around her, but no sign of slab or stone to tell the name of the sleeper or explain when he's alone. Alone out there on the hillside, a little fenced-off plot, slumbering on in silence by everyone forgot. With none to plant a flower or shed a silent tear in tribute to the gritter nerve of that cherry pioneer.
By golly, that's good. That's good, you remember that one very well.
Hey, Alfred, let me ask you. Didn't Fred Crew have a son that was
still... Yeah, he was a
little demented. He was retarded, yes.
Yeah. And the old man used to take good care of the boy.
He was committed once, and the father went outside and got him back.
Yeah,
it was
one of those unfortunate.
Yeah, I always admired the old man.
Oh, yeah.
Care
he
of that
boy.
He was a big old man.
Oh, yeah, he was way up in the 80s.
Yeah.
Well,
to finish up with, I'll recite you another poem by an old pioneer. Polish it up a little myself. No, I could give you that too, but I'm going to. In search of gold, I wandered here. Instead, I found a bitter tear. I thought that nature's lavish hand had cast it over all the land. The glittering bubble changed to gloom. The phantom dragged me down to doom. The cornucopia made no sound. No treasure on my path I found. No greeting but death's hollow call, that voice that must be heard by all. From this grim record you may know that on this rock here fell the blow that ushered out the fleeting breath that dragged me down to dusty death. A traveler in some distant day perchance may thither go his way, and wandering o'er the steps you trod may find a few bleaching clod. That false idol cast the lot that lured me to this dismal spot. In searching for that idol's cave, I only found a desert grave. My dying pillow was this stone, and passerby mar not this bone. As fleet the shadow from the plains, what once was man but this remains. Now toilers with a pick and spade, you know how this lone wreck was made. What is this smoldering ball of clay now passed so idly by? Pause, fellow man, upon your way, 'tis thought for you and I. Dreams of all that man could do were written first on each gray page. From here the inspiration drew that governed man in every age. Joy and hope, grief and despair, all gathered round that mystic throne. A thousand tenets ended there, to each and all it was their own. Some led hatred, lust, and shame, while other rulings were sublime. No two rulers were the same. Each was ruler for a time. Its count was filled with deadly strife when passion kept the files. Confusion in that haunt of life when fear trod to its aisles. The actors on this human stage played around this narrow space, and little jealousy flushed with rage slapped charity in the face. When pity wore her mourning gown, then fell the shadows thick and fast. When grief put on a solemn crown, they all were in a dungeon cast. Gloom's mantle fell upon us, throne when grief controlled the realm. But when it reached its saddest tone, despair was at the helm. And so remained that dreary night, till love became the ruling queen. Then joy poured out her silvery light, and hope blazed with magic sheen. See fancy in a robe of gold, and friendship wreathed in white. Draw back the shades, and you behold that banquet scene tonight. No messages are left behind, no faded writing on the wall, no trace of record can we find in that deserted banquet hall. Now hushed and silent, silent all, its tenant gone beyond recall, and left this wreck so doubly lone and chill and silent as a stone.
Thank you.
You got it already, haven't you?
Yeah,
that's
already
on the tape.
I can give you some other time if you wish it.
I think the words to it. Would you point out the location of the grave now?
Could I? Well, it's just above where the old town sat there, right up on the
Chattanooga.
Mm-hmm. Towards the spring, up on back town.
Old Cleary City.
Oh, I thought it was
Chattanooga. No, Cleary City. Is this recording?
Yeah, it is. If you're through, we'll turn it off and.
Yes, and thank you very much, Alfred, for a very.
Yeah, that's about it. But any other time you want to take it.
This was a very nice.
This concludes the talk by Alfred Gezi, Alaska pioneer, talking to the Alaska Historical Society on the 28th of March 1963. Well, this is the end of the tape. The bulk of the tape is on the other side, and at the beginning of this side, there's quite a blank spot. I didn't have the plug in, but this now is the end of the Alfred Gezi talk. Thank you.